Welcome to Healthcare IT Today. I'm John Lin, together with my colleague and friend Colin Hung. The world of technology and healthcare are ever changing in new and novel ways. That's why we love this stuff so much. So join us as we discuss the latest healthcare and health IT news, meshed together in new ways which help generate ideas and new perspectives. Plus, we'll have a little fun along the way. On today's episode, we'll be discussing healthcare interoperability. And today's episode is sponsored by Liaison Technologies. You can learn more about them at liaison.com under the section Healthcare. Be sure to follow the show on Twitter at the hashtag HITSM and our personal accounts at TechGuy and at Colin_Hung. Plus, check out our 13 years of Health IT blog content at healthcareittoday.com. Episode number 2, we're here. You ready for this?
We made it. We made it through our first one, and now we're on the second one, so this is going to be fun.
Well, I mean, we chose a really fun topic, healthcare interoperability. I'm already getting worked up and I haven't even started.
Well, we got a pretty good agenda today, so we thought we'd start with something new. We're going to discuss a stat of the day. So this is a stat that you or I have pulled down off the web, and we're just going to talk through it and kind of maybe tease it apart, maybe offer some commentary on it. And then we're going to get into the heart of today's discussion. Like you said, we're going to talk about interoperability. Is it dead? Is it alive? Is it just a fictitious, is it a fiction of our imagination? And then we're going to talk a little bit about the Athena Health acquisition that recently was announced. And we're going to end off by talking about a tweet that we received from an audience member and we wanted to discuss together. So that's the agenda we have for today. I'm pretty excited about this today.
Yep. I think we got some good content.
All right, so let's get right to it. Let's talk about the stat of the day. So this is one that you found, John. The percentage of the healthcare market that's actually owned by the big three, in this case being Epic, Cerner, and Meditech, is only 37.67%. And then the rest of the market is owned by everyone else, totaling around 63%. So, and this was, by the way, the source of the stat is from the HITGov dashboard that you found. So, John, why don't you go ahead and offer the comment of why you found this stat interesting?
Yeah, so I mean, I think, you know, when I looked at it, you know, and this is 2017 data because we don't have the, 2018 data yet, but, you know, it hasn't changed that dramatically in the last year. You know, we've seen minor movement. But everyone looks at the market and they say, oh, well, Epic, Cerner, and Meditech are dominating everything. And I love the juxtaposition of this stat with the other stats that Epic loves to proclaim, that, you know, there's 200 million patients on Epic, and they have over half, I think it's something like 60 to 70% of the patients in the U.S. have a part of their health record on Epic. But to me, that's actually the problem. It's only part of the record, right? I mean, Cerner can claim something almost the same, right? That a majority of patients in America have a record on Cerner. And so, you know, I think that's why the interoperability discussion is so important, is because even though Epic and Cerner and Meditech have really dominated the market, I mean, they own a huge portion of the market, and yet there's still a bunch of other players where our health record and our health data is stored. And that's why I think, you know, even, you know, you can be dominant, which is 37% of the market, and still not, you know, own the entire market. The way, so, you know, if you look at other industries, Microsoft owned the desktop market. I mean, they literally owned it. I mean, they got the huge percentages, right? Google owns the search market, right? So you could say that. But in the EHR world, that's not true, even though they've been extremely successful as companies.
No, I agree. And I think what this stat says to me is that we are still in a very heterogeneous, very diversified environment, despite the years of consolidation that have been happening in the market. And we're going to talk about that in a minute with Athena. You know, despite the consolidation, we're still in a market where there is a lot of players. Now, and from one sense, I'm actually pretty happy about that because, you know, the more players means more competition. More competition means that we're going to have more innovation that's happening. But you're right. It does mean that interoperability is going to be a need for many years to come because we don't have a dominant player that owns like 90% of this pie where, hey, if you're just on that, of course, you're going to be more interoperable. We're going to have to be dealing with many, many different EHRs, many, many different companies trying to talk to one another for a while yet. So that's what I took out of this stat. And it is surprising, but I mean, it has grown. I mean, if you watch it over the years, it has grown up. It crept up a little bit, but it's still not, you know, past the 50% mark.
Sure, and we see the trend, right, that they are selecting Epic, Cerner, and Meditech at a huge clip, right? So, you know, I mean, this will continue to change. But the problem is, this is just the hospital market. It turns out that the top three in the ambulatory space, according to the .gov stats, is still about the same percentage, right? And even if you expand that to the top 10, you still have like 60% of the market with just the top 10. So it's like, okay, well, at 10, you're already, you know, that's a lot of interoperability and a lot of disparate systems that are being used. And that doesn't even take into account home health. It doesn't take into account long-term care, doesn't take into account skilled nursing. And then of course, every patient and every, you know, overused stat of the day in healthcare, you read on Twitter every day, it seems like someone's sharing that, I forget the exact number they share. I've seen, you know, 80% or 90% of your health happens outside of the hospital and outside of the doctor's office. So, you know, that doesn't include any of that information, you know, which I think to me, okay, that's fine, right? I mean, that's a different discussion for another day. But, you know, even within the hospital and the medical, you know, healthcare organizations, there is so much there's so many different systems that's not going to change in any way overnight, right?
Right. So on this topic, what I'll say is the stat I wish that they would publish is really around what percentage of the other EHRs have we actually connected to and actually formed an interoperability to? Because to me, it doesn't matter if you have 30% of the market or 60% of the market. To me, as a buyer and as an EHR user, I would be more concerned with, well, what percentage of the ecosystem are you actually connected to? Because I do care whether you're 30% connected versus 80% connected. That's the stat I wish that they would have. But that leads us to the next topic. So let's talk about that. Interoperability, is it dead or is it alive? And John, you've written some stuff recently about this. So I'll let you start around this particular topic.
Yeah. So, I mean, the title of my recent article was Interoperability, Healthcare Interoperability is a Joke. And, you know, I just, you know, I guess it came through all these experiences going to events, you know, going to showcases of interoperability, going to events focused on interoperability, going to user conferences. And here's what they say at these user conferences. Oh, we're going to start doing FHIR. Or, Commonwealth and care quality are finally going to connect. You know, my inspiration actually for the article was this big announcement that care quality is now going to support FHIR. Care quality is like 5 years old. FHIR is at least that old as well. So it took 5 years for care quality to say, okay, let's do FHIR. Like, to me, that's interoperability is dead. And the problem with it is that, you know, and we've known this for a long time, the practices and hospitals don't want interoperability. So we're trying to solve a problem that they don't want. And, you know, I understand a little bit of why the government is angry, the patients are angry, because many patients assume interoperability happens and it just doesn't. And it's not in many of their best interests as a business for it to happen.
Yeah, I know you're right. I mean, I recently had some meetings and some discussions with people from Redox and Point Click Care and other organizations. And, you know, one of the interesting things when I was in Denver, what we talked about was that, you know, everybody wants to share, everyone likes the idea of sharing data, but no one wants to share data for two reasons. One, sometimes it is a competitive advantage to hold on to the data. That's sort of the case why payers don't share quite as much. But also, it's hard to share data, right? If you want to share data as a provider, it's not easy just to flip the switch. You have to, you know, figure out what protocol you're going to use. You have to figure out, you know, are you going to just trade CCDAs? Are you going to do some other EDI? Are you going to do FHIR? Are you going to do, like, what format are you going to use? So you have to figure out all this stuff, and then you get to figuring out, okay, what fields of data am I actually going to share now in those formats? So it isn't easy. And I think that you're right. That's why the barrier is so high. And I think that's why a lot of people give up on the interoperability tree. I will have to argue the counter though, John. I will say, I think there are some very specific use cases where interoperability is happening. So it's not quite dead. I just think it's very specific. I'll give you an example again recently, because I was with them. Point Click Care is really working with Redox and with their acute care partners to find a way to share data at the transition point between a skilled nursing facility and an acute care facility. And there, right now, what they're interested in doing is some work around just getting the medication lists and getting the medical record transitioned from one spot to another. And so that's a very specific use case that they're trying to solve. They're not trying to solve all of interoperability. This has nothing to do with patient access. This has nothing to do with, you know, sharing labs. It's only just around when I discharge someone from here, get them over here, I want to be able to share that data electronically instead of via fax, which is the way it's done today. So there is some interoperability happening. There is some, I guess you can say, there is a business case for that to happen. And I'm excited about that aspect of interoperability.
Yeah, I guess the problem I have with interoperability is that there's always these two competing viewpoints and they get skewed in the discussion. So, for example, there are hundreds of millions of transactions that happen between healthcare organizations today. I mean, literally hundreds of millions, even within, you know, just a couple health systems, they can see hundreds of millions of data sharing that happens across HL7 interfaces, across EDI interfaces. And so you look at that and you're like, well, interoperability is happening, right? I mean, HL7 is really successful with hundreds of millions of transactions every day and every week and every month. You know, it's just sharing like crazy. And you look at that and you say, okay, well, then interoperability is happening. It's real in healthcare, right? And so you look at that, and that's one view, right? Interoperability is happening. And I think I would almost describe it the use case that you described it, that it's like, oh, there's very specific use cases where it makes sense and it's happening. You know, I call it small interoperability, right? Or slices of interoperability. And that makes sense and certainly is happening on a large scale. But then you have the other end of the spectrum where the patient goes from one doctor's office and then, you know, goes to another doctor's office and their, you know, their MRI image or the results of their MRI doesn't transfer, right? And so they're like, well, so interoperability is not occurring, right? And so that's the problem that I think we have when we talk about interoperability is almost that whole phrase, healthcare interoperability, has just been totally corrupted. Because on the one hand, there's a lot of business transactions that are happening, millions. But on the other hand, many patients are suffering because the interoperability doesn't happen. And there are good business reasons for it not to happen. There are a lot of technical reasons. You know, I think of my friend at Interop Guy on Twitter, Mario Highland. He said to me one time, he's like, the problem with healthcare interoperability, because everyone likes to compare it to the financial world, is that healthcare interoperability is an order of magnitude more complex than financial transactions. So, yeah, I mean, healthcare interoperability is not an easy thing. And if you want a reason not to be interoperable, you can find one, right? Like, it's complex, it's hard. And so, you know, getting more to the core of is healthcare interoperability a joke, right? Like, is it not really happening? Are they avoiding it? That's my other problem, is that I think that many EHR vendors use the efforts for interoperability as a smokescreen to hiding really being interoperable, because their customers aren't asking for interoperability in many cases, and you know there's no business case for them to do interoperability, and so they're using these millions of HL7 messages to say, oh yeah, we're interoperable. Or they're using FHIR to say, oh, well, once FHIR matures, we'll be interoperable. Or once CommonWell and care quality mature, then we'll be interoperable. But it's not mature yet. And the question I ask is, will they ever be mature? Or is it just a smokescreen to say, hey, we're trying, but we're waiting on them?
Yeah, I think we're still a ways away from true interoperability. I'm hopeful that I'm optimistic, maybe that's the better word, that some of these use cases that are very specific, that there is a business case for it and driven by patient need, is going to drive the industry forward. It's going to be slow. It's going to be painful. But I look at these transition points. I look at the sharing of lab data. I look at some of the things that are happening even on the financial side of healthcare, where the data is more interoperable. I look to those as signs of hope that we're going to get there. So if you're just tuning in, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Health IT Today with John Lin, that's him, and me, Colin Hung. And we'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Liaison Technologies. a company that you're very intimately familiar with, John.
Yeah, so, you know, I feel lucky. I've been able to work with Liaison Technologies for a lot of years, together in a lot of different capacities. And they really are an interesting company because they bring some of the latest technologies and approaches to interoperability and really those slices of meaningful interoperability, to corrupt a word, meaningful in healthcare. And yeah, they're cloud-based, which is unique, I think, in the interoperability space. Yes, they can do all the standard healthcare interfaces that you would expect. But one thing that I think makes them special is all of their years working with external third-party data across multiple industries, which I think is going to be the key to healthcare shift to value-based reimbursement, is access to these third-party data along with a real understanding of the healthcare data. So, you know, if you want to learn more about how they can help you solve your data management, your integration problems, check them out at liaison.com. That's liaison.com. And check out the section under healthcare. You can see a lot what they're doing. I mean, they really do bring some interesting things. And like I said, I think it's more about meaningful interoperability, you know, which is an interesting juxtaposition to our last conversation, right? Let's actually do what's important, and let's do interoperability and provide value. And I think that's what Liaison does, whereas a lot of other vendors, you know, EHR vendors in particular, are just trying to deal with regulators rather than to solve the problem.
All right, let's move on to topic number three. So Athena Health was just acquired by Veras de Haas Capital and Elliott Management to the tune of $5.5 billion. What does this mean for the EHR industry, John?
Death. No, just kidding. No, but wow. Can you imagine being an Athena Health user right now? First, when Jonathan Bush left, Athena Health lost its identity. Its identity was its CEO. So it's going to be interesting to see how it as a company evolves. It's going to be interesting merging the two, Athena Health and GE Healthcare, GE Centricity, which is both owned by Veritas Capital. That'll be an interesting merging of cultures. And will they merge it? Will they run them separately? I think it's interesting. But the reason I found it super interesting was I can't imagine, and you know, we'll see if I'm right or wrong. We can come back where John was right, where John was wrong. But I can't imagine that these private equity companies are going to want to continue the efforts that Jonathan Bush was doing in the hospital space. They acquired Razor Insights, which was a great acquisition, a great effort for them to create a true cloud platform for hospital and health systems and to really compete with the Epics and Cerners and Meditechs of the world. It was the most ambitious. ECW has done a little bit as well, although I think they're looking more international than they are trying to compete in the U.S. But other than Athena Health, who else was trying to challenge them? There just wasn't really anyone else. And I think that this private equity buyout is going to kill that. So that was, I think, probably one of the most interesting parts as I look at this transition. And we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'll double down on it. But that's my prediction, is that it's the end of the acute care efforts by Athena Health.
Well, one thing I'll say about the acquisition, it put an end to rumors that had been going on for about a year as to whether Athena was going to be sold, who was going to be sold to. So finally it happened. So now we got to move on to other topics. But what I find worrying, I guess, is that, of course, these capital firms, I mean, they're all about, you know, making the company more efficient, packaging it up, maybe getting it ready for another sale to someone else. So to me, this is a further sign that consolidation is happening. Already, you know, now we're seeing sort of potential between GE and Athena. One thing I will say about this is that maybe this is going to be finally the realization of one of Bush's dreams, which was to do the acute care and the ambulatory and bring them together, because GE does play a little bit more on the acute side. So that, you know, that could be something that can be happening. But I agree. I think this is a sign that, you know, it's now more about the dollars versus the innovation, which is a bit sad to see, because the one thing I will say about Athena, like you, you know, with their Athena Insights and some of the other things they were doing, it was kind of on the bleeding edge of trying to bring some big data analytics to the data that they hold. And I thought that was pretty cool. Now I'm not sure whether or not this is going to be continued under the new management. I will say, yeah, I was at the
GE. A lot more disruption, please, too, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. I was at the GE Centricity User Conference, actually, a couple of weeks ago, and this was definitely topic number one. And you could sense sort of a, I won't say a pall, but definitely everyone was pushing pause on further investment in the Centricity platform because they wanted to see how this was going to shake out. Were they going to get merged with Athena? Were they going to get some of the best of Athena into Centricity and vice versa? Was some of the best of Centricity going to go over to Athena? There's a lot of questions. And, you know, despite the best efforts, I don't think anyone got a lot of answers. But it was interesting to hear that, it is obviously very concerning for these people. I don't think there anyone, by the way, I don't think anyone was getting ready to leave. But I think they were just very concerned about what the future of that platform was really going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is great news for Cerner and Epic and Meditech. I think that they loved this news. And actually, I think that's true for most ambulatory EHR vendors as well. Because I think most of them were competing with Athena in a lot of deals. So, I think that they now have a much different angle they can take. You know, you can already hear the salespeople ready to talk about, do you want to go with Athena, right? You don't even know where they're headed, right? So
there's certainly a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt being thrown into the market right now with this acquisition. However, it will give them a little bit of stability, right? I mean, admittedly, in the last few months, it was probably very hard to be an Athena customer. It was probably very hard to be an Athena salesperson.
The last 3 months, yeah.
Yeah, I think at least now, for the next couple of years, things are going to stabilize a little bit. So I think they're going to make some more market gains. We're going to find out very quickly where they're going to invest and where they're not. And so I think you're going to have a very clear idea of what the new Athena Health/GE is going to be about. And then you'll be able to make a good decision from there.
I want to see if they roll off Hippocrates. That seems like a private equity move, is to roll off Hippocrates, sell it off if they can. Who knows if there's any value there, which is a crazy acquisition. I'm not sure it worked out that well for them. And then the second question, of course, is also, where's Jonathan Bush going to go now, man? Is he going to get picked up? Is he going to just retire? I can't imagine him retiring, right? So he's got to crop up somewhere else, and I hope it's in healthcare again, because he's just a fascinating guy. Even though some of the checkered history stuff I feel bad about, and hopefully he's gotten some help there. But, I think he's going to crop up again, I think. So.
Yeah, no, I hope so. He was definitely a character. He definitely added a lot of color to the industry. It was always interesting to hear what he said. I only got to know him, obviously, through this public speaking. I don't know him personally, but he definitely was someone you talked about, good or bad, in the discussion. So not that we need something like that, but at least it gave us a focal point to say, okay, who's the go-to to get a little really good quote from? He was the person for a long time. So definitely interested to see where he crops up, but definitely interested in the future of Athena Health, because I do admire what they have done, and they have a pretty good product, and I know their users were very loyal to them. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes.
And their billing side, I mean, that's why people loved it, is their business model and the way they took over the billing. Doctors were sick of being in the business side of things. They just wanted to practice medicine. Athena Health said, I'll take over your billing, I'll take over your IT and take care of it for you. So it's been smart. A lot of the things he did, he's a flamboyant, he's ADD, admittedly, publicly he said that, he knows that, but he's also really bright. So, hopefully, he can bring some of that to another area of the industry.
Yeah, I think overall, and we'll switch to the next topic. Overall, I think this is a good piece of news overall for the industry, because again, I think it represents, the fact that we are going through consolidation, which I think is needed because we do have too many players. So this is painful, I think, right now because there's some uncertainty, but I think in the long term, it'll be a good thing for the health IT industry. Yep. So let's go to the last topic here, and the last topic is, if I can get my screen to work. Oh, here it is. So, and that is for, we're looking at a tweet that was sent out by one of our audience members, and it's a mutual friend of ours, Dr. Rasu Shrestha, who is VP of Innovation over at UPMC in Pittsburgh. So his quote via Twitter was, innovation done right makes technology invisible. And this was in reference to his recent appearance at RSNA in Chicago. John, what did you like about this tweet?
I love that he got the cover story of RSNA, and you know, Rasu is such a unique individual. You know, someone that everyone in healthcare IT should follow. If you're not on Twitter following him, amazing individual, amazing doctor, amazing innovator, and he comes from radiology, which like that's amazing in and of itself. But no, I mean, his thought is perfect, right? Because the best innovation is invisible. Right. I mean, when you think about it, what did Uber do? You know, it made the experience of getting a taxi invisible. I mean, that was the beauty of it. Right. And I mean, they did it. The service itself was no different than a taxi. It took you from one place to the other. But the process became invisible because you just pull it up on your phone and all the stuff that happened on the back end was just invisible to you. And we need more of that in healthcare because unfortunately, you know, some of it's due to poor design, some of it's due to regulation, some of it's due to reimbursement requirements. The EHRs, when implemented, weren't invisible. They were quite the opposite. They were quite visible. And so, the more we can make it, you know, technology invisible, I think the better. And I think we're starting to see some of those things come out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I took from Rasu's quote here is that, you know, it's a commentary on how we didn't take the time as technologists to really integrate the technology into the workflow and the day-to-day work of the people using it. What we did instead was we kind of adopted some cool technology and forced it upon the people. And so it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't invisible. In reality, it should be in the opposite way around. We should have just blended it into their workflow so it had been seamlessly integrated to what they've already done. And that's the better way to adopt technology when it's not, you don't even notice. Like today, you don't notice your garage door opener. You don't notice cruise control on your car. They're just baked into the way you drive. They're baked into the way you operate. You know, that's what we should have done in healthcare. And that was the missing opportunity when we started implementing everything from, you know, lab systems to EHRs. There was, you know, we made clinicians conform to the technology, which isn't the way it should have been.
But it takes a lot more work to make it invisible.
It does. And I think that's the challenge. I think we're realizing it now. I think as we, you know, you and I have talked offline about things like the voice-enabled EHR and some of the fantastic user interfaces that we've seen at some of the trade shows from some of the new up-and-coming companies and even some of the existing ones who've really put some thought around that. So I think they're finally getting the message to say, hey, we really do need to make the technology much more easy to use, and we really need to make it more adaptable or adapt it more to their to the existing workflows that they have. So on that note, John, we are out of time already. This always goes by so fast. So thank you to all of you who tuned into this episode of Healthcare IT Today. You can find more details about the show on the programs page of healthcarenowradio.com. And please share your voice and engage with the community at healthcareittoday.com, which is our site, or on Twitter using the hashtag HITSM. I'm Colin Hung. This is my partner in crime, John Lin. Until next time, have a great week.